Welcome to Know Yourself. This is Dan Udell, and this podcast episode is a little bit freestyle, and it's just going to be me and you hopefully listening and enjoying. It's going to be a little bit intimate because I'm going to go a little bit deep and share something that happened with me recently, because hopefully it will help some of you. Even if you haven't experienced it yourself, just have a little empathy or a bit more understanding. And if it's happened to you yourself, it might help you understand that you're not alone and there's not anything wrong with you. You're completely fine. Like I say, you're not alone, really. That's kind of the main thing. And what I want to share is it's all about panic attacks. So I was at work, and I was trying to, over the past kind of 5 months, I've been trying to arrange getting onto a course to finish my training to be a therapist, because I'm currently a trainee therapist at the moment. And in the UK, you need to have a combination of level 2, level 3, level 4, and some organizations require you to have level 5, but to be a qualified therapist you need level 4. So I'm trying to do my level 4 counseling qualification at the moment. So I had been arranging with my employer since kind of May this year to try and go down to 4 days a week. So kind of had lots of kind of micro meetings, lots of honesty, lots of kind of vulnerability with my workplace, kind of being open and honest, putting all my cards on the table and saying, look, I want to move career eventually. This is part of a career move. I'm not going anywhere, but this is my plan. I want to go on this training course. Do you support me? Not financially, just do you support me in that I can drop my hours down and, you know, we can talk about pay later on. So I've kind of been negotiating and kind of going through this process, trying to figure out financially if it's even going to work. Because typically what organizations do is they try and prorate your salary. So, for example, if I'm going down from 5 days a week, because I work 40 hours a week, to 4 days a week, they'd try and prorate my salary by 20%. So it can end up being quite a chunk. So I didn't necessarily want that. So I wanted to see if I could do what's called condensed hours, where you do your regular 37 and a half or 40 hours within the allotted days that you've got. So I would effectively be doing 10 hours a day because I work a 40-hour week. So I was trying to kind of arrange that as well. And in the meantime, I've been scouting out universities and colleges, and I was massively let down by quite a big university in Birmingham. I went for, if it felt like the ideal course, I want to be an integrative counsellor. So integrative in English means you kind of study and focus on multiple models. So you might encompass person-centred counselling, CBT, psychodynamic therapy, Gestalt. You might incorporate almost like a toolbox approach. So when your client comes in the room, you kind of pick and choose the model you feel as though is going to suit them. It's kind of a more modern style of therapy. Some people prefer to specialize in an area. Personally, I feel as though integrative kind of resonates the most with me. So I found this course, and it kind of felt perfect because it also had a kind of seal of approval from the BACP. The BACP is the British Association of Counsellors and Psychologists. And they are one of the kind of authorities. Counselling's not a regulated industry yet. These authorities aren't recognised by the British government as, you know, regulatory bodies. They're there to kind of lay down ethics and rules, but there's no kind of legislation to, you know, really back these up, really. They haven't got the full kind of support of the government behind them. It's really kind of like the industry experts and the kind of people right at the tip of the spear that are kind of leading the charge. And I think one day it will be regulated. I think it's, you know, in the next 5-10 years, I think that this is going to be a regulated industry. But yeah, that was what was so attractive to the course as well, because it was just another tick in the box for me. It was already in a really attractive course anyway, but seeing that it was BACP approved as well was just great, because a lot of organisations look for that when they want to hire you. Because a lot of the time you don't have on-the-job experience, you've got voluntary experience when you go for your first counselling role. So anything that kind of supplement your CV or, you know, set you apart from others, I'm always kind of looking out for that sort of stuff, because everyone starts off on the same playing field, so it's very competitive. That really attracted me to the course. So filled out all the application forms. It doesn't go through UCAS because it was a part-time course, because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I was trying to arrange this within my kind of work week by going down to 4 days a week. So it's part-time course, 1 day a week. Great. And I turn up for the interview, and it's not just an interview. It's kind of like a whole day, really. You got like a meet and greet with everyone. We had to do like a group discussion on, you know, how minorities might feel in society and how that affects us as counsellors in the room when we're dealing with minorities. Because, for example, I'm a white male, so I haven't got an experience as a minority. So how does that affect my counselling style? You know, those sorts of things. Really open discussion. And we were being marked on that kind of discussion, you know. Who's at the forefront, who's talking and making valid points, all that sort of stuff we're being marked on. Then I had to do a written exam. We were basically given a case study, and it was kind of like a comprehension exercise to see if you understood what was being talked about. And then as it got on, it got a little bit harder as well. There was a little bit of maths in there as well. And I'm shocking at maths, so I've no idea how I did on that. I went for the interview afterwards. So we all sat around and we had to wait one by one to get called in. And I was one of the last people to get called in. And I went into the room, and there was these two ladies who had been there throughout the whole day, and sat down, and I felt very kind of comfortable in their company. I felt, you know, these are going to be my people. They're teaching counselling. They're going to have the same skill set. They're going to have the same kind of attitude and kind of ethos that I've got. We're all about helping people, and it's about, like, you know, we're a group of people that are very in tune with our emotions, very self-aware. You know, we want to help others. I kind of felt great that I felt as though I was amongst like-minded people. So I was really excited when I got in the room and they started asking me why I wanted to do the course, what they felt, they wanted to know what I could bring to the course as well. So I was very honest. I explained my history. I've been in therapy for a while. I absolutely fell in love with counselling, and so much so that I wanted to do it myself. And even in my spare time, I do stuff like this, like the podcast, and, you know, I've got a blog that I write as well. Really love writing the blog. And I also interact with a lot of people on Instagram and Twitter as well. I feel as though I'm part of the community as well. I'm not just someone who wants to do this to get paid to do it. I'm passionate about it. So I kind of went in all guns blazing, and, you know, they seemed very happy with what I was saying. And we kind of got talking about placement, and I asked whether it was possible to do placements on evenings or weekends, and the whole tone of the interview completely changed. Now, the reason I asked if I could do my placement on evenings or weekends is because I work 9 to 5 actually 9 to 5:30, but anyway, Monday to Friday. So really, if I'm going to be dropping down a day a week from work, say like a Wednesday, you know, I probably want my placement to be that Wednesday evening, right? Or the weekend, because those are probably the only days I've got free then. And like I say, the whole kind of attitude of the people that were interviewing me absolutely changed. It like flipped on its head. You know, they said, we've not got anyone really that's been able to get a weekend or evening placement apart from one person that's currently on the course. And I said, oh, okay, that's positive. So it is possible. And they were like, yeah, but it's really difficult and it's really competitive. And, you know, you might not get it. And I was kind of met with a lot of like negativity, I felt. And I just said, well, you know, I'd like to try. I'd like to, you know, go for it. I'm really passionate about this. And I think I could find something. I think I've got a large area. Like the university was in Birmingham, but I've got the benefit of being able to travel to Birmingham. But I'd also have my area that I'm in as well, my county, which is Worcestershire. So I kind of felt like I had advantage of being able to pull from like two different pools of like potential like placement areas. So I was kind of feeling very confident about it, that I'd be able to find somewhere. But this woman was like dead set, like on kind of trying to put me off going on the course then. It was just a little bit disappointing. And, you know, her attitude was so kind of appalling from that point on. You know, she just really kind of made me doubt that I could even do the course and, you know, whether it was worth even trying. It didn't feel like it was about the course anymore. It felt like it was about logistics. And it was a shame because my placement wouldn't even have been for 2 years anyway. So it kind of felt like a moot point, really, in my eyes. So, yeah, we didn't really see eye to eye there. And there was a couple of other points after that where I wasn't particularly happy with some of the things that they were saying. They kind of came across as academics as opposed to actual counsellors themselves. There was a real kind of lack of like empathy and understanding from them for some of the things that they were saying. So it really kind of, it put me off for a little bit, actually. I stopped looking for counselling courses for a little bit. I kind of even questioned if I wanted to do it because their kind of attitude was so like negative. So it kind of made me question it a little bit. I eventually bounced back though, and I found a really great course at a private organisation called Maple Leaf. So they're not a university or anything like that. And I went for the interview and I just had an absolute connection straight away with the woman that interviewed me. Felt really, went away feeling really positive. She answered all my questions. You know, I wasn't in there 10 minutes like I was with the university. I was in there for a full hour. You know, she answered kind of every query that I had, very patient with me. I just felt looked after and like I was treated like a person instead of a number. You know, she just wanted to see my credentials. She wanted to see a little bit about what I knew, but that was through a conversation, you know. It's very easy to see with counselling whether someone's had the training or not. It's very clear. It's a lot of it's skill based, you know. You've either got those skills or you haven't. So yeah, I just came away like really like pumped about it. It was, you know, a lot less money than the university course as well. Everything just seemed to line up. It was integrative as well. You know, they're kind of prerequisites for a placement were a lot less kind of strict as well. Everything just lined up perfectly. So I went back to work and I explained the situation. Look, I've got myself onto a course. I've got to pay my deposit in a month. I haven't paid it yet. Are we good to go? Like, can I, have I got the green light to, go for this? And the kind of person that I spoke to said, yeah, this is going to happen. We just don't know about the salary sort of side of things yet. I said, cool. I can figure that bit out, but as long as I've got the green light, I'm good to go. So away I went, paid the deposit, and that was that really. In my eyes, I was on the course, sorted. Then in the meantime, our organization has been purchased by another company. We were up for sale, so we've been acquired by another organization, and essentially the deal that I'd got arranged with work had been declined. They said no, you can't have the day release that you want. You can't go down to 4 days a week, even with a pro-rata salary. It's just not something we're willing to do. So I kind of walked away from that absolutely heartbroken, to be honest. It was really difficult for me to hear after all this kind of planning's gone into it, since May this year, and kind of all the ups and downs that I've had with actually like finding a course, then paying the deposit because I was told that it was okay. And then having to phone up the people on the course 2 weeks before I'm about to start and explain my situation, it really it fucking sucked, to be honest. It was, one of the hardest phone calls I've had to make, really. So that was really tough. I was really stressed at this point, because it kind of felt like my future slipped out of my hands. Nothing felt concrete anymore. I didn't really feel grounded in my personal life as a result of that. It just makes you question everything. So yeah, after that, it kind of knocked me out of line. I was no longer aligned with myself, if that makes sense. And my trip to New York, I'm going back to New York. At the start of this year, I went on my own in January to New York, and I'm going back September the 19th, which is in, well, it'd be about 12 days from when I'm recording this. This is Friday evening for me. It's in about 12 days, and in January, on the flight back, I had a bit of an experience. We had a bit of a rocky takeoff, and I really didn't like it. It really kind of it really messed me up in a lot of ways, to be honest. I felt like that. I felt like that was it. I was gonna die. It was such a extreme feeling and extreme. I'd never felt that way before. I never felt like I was actually, that was it. It was going to happen. Luckily they were able to sort the plane out, and we kind of just took off normally. But yeah, I didn't sleep on the flight. It was, like an overnight flight, a red eye, and I did not sleep at all. I was absolutely petrified, and I couldn't wait to land. And kind of since January, I've kind of been sat with that feeling. I mean, when I came back, I immediately booked, ironically, I booked plane tickets to go back because I love New York that much. But in the back of my mind, I kind of knew that I was petrified of getting back on that plane again. So fast forward, back to the story I was just telling you. I've not long ago been told that I can't go on this course, and it's kind of absolutely shattered me. And I'm in a meeting at work, and someone's talking to me about how they've recently had a trip like across the Atlantic Ocean on the plane, and they were telling me about their plane journey. And I'm suddenly, whilst they're talking, so they're in the middle of a conversation with me, I get this really strange feeling. I go like really lightheaded. I went really lightheaded. I felt like immediately after that, I felt as though I wasn't in control. You know, just, I felt, just didn't really feel like I had a handle on things. I didn't feel like I knew what was about to happen, you know, really uneasy and off balance in my own mind. Then I kind of felt like something was wrong, like an impending sense of doom. And then immediately after that, I felt as though I was going to die. And that feeling was so intense. It was really horrible, to be honest with you. And it felt like I had like an elephant sat on my chest. Everything went really tight. I realized that I wasn't breathing. I just stopped breathing. So I was like really carefully like drawing in my breath, because like I had no idea what was going on. And I just got up in the middle of the conversation. I said, I've got to go. And I was actually in the middle of a meeting at work. And I said, I've got to go. And I went into the bathroom and I slumped against the wall. And I just like sat on the floor in this toilet for about 45 minutes. Just trying to figure out what the hell had happened, why I felt that way. And all the energy out of my body just absolutely, it was sapped. I was like completely drained. I actually went home, like I left work immediately, because I just assumed that I wasn't well, like physically, you know, I'd come down with something, or, you know, I just wasn't the right day for me or something like that. You know, it wasn't until I kind of got home, I started messaging like a couple of friends who are therapists, and I said to them, like, I had this weird thing happen to me today, and I explained everything as I've just explained to you guys. And one of them said, for sure you've just had a panic attack. And I was like, what? I was like, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I was like, but I wasn't hyperventilating, you know, I didn't need a paper bag, like, you know, like, I wasn't, like, freaking out. But then she kind of, like, broke it down for me, and she was like, look, you know, I'm not diagnosing you or anything, because, like, you know, I'm your friend. But she said, you know, some people present in different ways, but she said, everything that you're telling me is kind of textbook. And I started looking it up, and I mean, she was right. And of course, what does one do when they're presented with something which proves that the other person's right? They go and get a second opinion. So naturally, I spoke with another friend who's a therapist, and she lives in the UK, and she's called Sarah. And I messaged her, and she basically said the same thing. And I asked her if we could talk on the phone, because, like, I just did not know what to do whatsoever. It felt like, you know, like when you go to school on your first day and, like, a couple of kids tell you to go, like, to your maths lesson, and they've actually sent you to the history block, and then, like, the school bully comes up to you, picks up your bag and tips it upside down so all your stuff falls out on the floor, and then turns it inside out. That's exactly what it felt like had happened to me. Like, I got home and I went into bed, and, like, I had my window open because it was a really hot day. This was a month ago, by the way, this happened. It's a really hot day. I had my window open, and, like, I would hear dogs barking and it would make me jump out of my skin. I was really irritable. Little noises were scaring me. It was like all my senses had been dialed up to 10. I was having panic attacks by thinking about panic attacks. I was just an absolute mess, to be honest. And I had absolutely no idea what was going on. Even though I knew that there were panic attacks now, I just how do you even comprehend that when you're given that information? It didn't make any sense. It wasn't real for me yet. And as someone who suffered with PTSD, I actually thought I had a handle on this. I thought I knew how all this worked, but it was completely different to PTSD. Like with PTSD, once you get away from the thing that's triggering you, you settle down and that kind of feeling of flight or fight like goes away. But with this, it was like the effects of the panic attack, they like stay with you for so much longer. It's like an emotional hangover. It really is like quite incredible. I've never experienced anything like it. And yeah, I spoke with Sarah over the phone and she said, yeah, like, you've had a panic attack basically. It sounds like you were really stressed out. You were really triggered with what was going on with work. And then obviously you got your holiday coming up as well. You're not sure like what's going on there or how you're going to react when you get on the plane. She said it all kind of seems like very natural for me. She said, of course it's horrible. And of course, it's, really horrible that you've been through that. But she said, I can connect the dots and see why. And she said, basically, sounds like you've got a problem with like relinquishing control in your life. A lot of your future is being dictated by other people at the moment. And you've got this flight coming up. And again, that's something that's completely out of your control. You're going to be sat there literally while someone else is like flying a plane. And you had an experience last time that, didn't sit well with you. So she said it kind of seems all very natural. So I asked her what I could do next, and she actually told me to go on Amazon and buy this book called DARE. DARE is an acronym for like an anxiety and panic attack kind of method of. It's not a prevention method, it's more facing your panic attacks and taking them head on. And I've been reading it and I'm about halfway through and I'd strongly recommend it, by the way. It's completely helped me kind of accept the reality of what's going on, and it's not going to be a quick fix. It's something that I've got to work on. So she asked me to read that, and obviously she's a therapist, and I said to her, bear in mind this lady lives like 2 hours away from me in the car. I said, can I like book in a session with you, like a counseling session? She's a CBT therapist. And my therapist that I've got at the moment, psychodynamic. So psychodynamic therapists are more like, it's more like Freud, Carl Jung kind of work, focusing on your the relationship dynamics in your life, the kind of invisible webs that, live in the background of our lives, connecting us to other people, the subconscious and conscious mind. It looks at your childhood, that sort of thing. Whereas CBT is very kind of direct and goal orientated. It focuses a lot around phobias. It really helps with like anxiety, panic attacks. It helps with it's really it's seemed to be really affected, sorry, effective with those kind of mental illnesses or with those issues. So and I knew this because of my counseling training, so my instincts kind of told me that it was the right thing to do. So I reached out to Sarah and she said, yeah, sure, we can do a session. She said, make sure you read as much of that book as you can before coming to see me. So I thought, great. And yeah, I kind of had a month in between booking that session with her and then actually having it. I had to wait 4 weeks and kind of read this book, try and understand what was happening for me. You know, in my head, I was like, I've just got to maintain, you know, I've just got to keep Dan going and, you know, not do anything like too drastic, you know, try not to commit to anything too much until you understand what's going on. As in, you know, don't go out with family and friends too much if it's going to drain you. Because that was the scary thing for me. It was not understanding when I was going to have another one. And then that transformed into the fear of having another one. You know, for me, it was constantly thinking, is this going to be the next, like, is this going to be the thing that gives me my next one? What does my next one look like? You know, is it going to be as bad as the first one? You kind of just constantly anticipating in that sense. But then other days I would, you know, I'd kind of calm down and I might not think about it. And then I might drink a cup of coffee or, you know, or someone might cut me up at a roundabout in my car and I have to slam my brakes on. And then suddenly you're kind of on edge. And as soon as you're on that edge, it only takes like a little thing then to push you over into like a full blown panic attack. So a couple of weeks ago, I'm at the cinema and I'm watching the new Fast and Furious film, Hobbs and Shaw. And I'm kind of in this state of like edging, you know, I've had a little bit of caffeine, you know, I'd had a bit of a scare on the motorway where I think some lady had like pulled in front of me or some guy, I can't remember. And yeah, I was kind of edging. I felt uncomfortable. I felt very comfortable seeing the film. I just didn't feel comfortable in myself. I didn't feel safe. You know, I felt anxious, really. So I'm watching the film and there's a scene where there's a lot of violence going on and it was really kind of triggering for me and it felt really uncomfortable because suddenly I'm right on the edge and I'm noticing that my breathing's going really slow. It feels like my throat's closing up. I can feel heart palpitations. And you're kind of going from like one thought stream to the next. You know, you're going, what if? What does this mean? Oh my God. And then it's just slowly kind of spiraling until I kind of feel this kind of wave or pulse within me. And that's kind of when I've got that feeling of like a panic attack happening. For me, it feels like a kind of like a wave or like a pulse to like, just get out, you know, run, go away from where I'm currently at. So it's still kind of like, at this point, very brand new for me. You know, some days when I'm going to work and I'm already triggered when I'm at work because I'm still thinking about how pissed off I am about not being able to go and do my counselling level 4 and like anticipating conflict because, you know, I've still got to be a part of this organisation and, you know, try and maintain a level of professionalism and that sort of thing. You know, I never want to kind of bring any drama into the workplace. So still carrying a lot with me. And, you know, there's some days where I just have to go for a breather in the toilet and you kind of collect myself together because you'd be like, you know, it felt very easy to be overwhelmed. So yeah, it's definitely been an experience. Like I say, I'm trying to think how to explain it. It feels like starting again. It feels like starting from a brand new journey, really. You know, I thought PTSD was one journey and, you know, the 6 years of therapy, but sometimes all of that can't prep prep you for something like this happening, something so physiological and mental happening where you're in such a heightened state of fear or anxiety about the future. It just didn't go away. It was just sticking with me, it felt like maybe this is going to be the new me, where I've just got to work through this now for another like however many years of therapy. Very uncomfortable, knocked my confidence about my self-esteem. I've been eating really well. I've been exercising. I've been doing really well with blogging and that sort of thing. And it started to fall away kind of before my eyes, really, because it's hard to look after yourself and it's hard to want to do things for yourself when you're not really sure if you're all together in your head. And part of me was like, God, is this the start of some kind of like breakdown? And, am I more stressed than I think I am? Because I think I actually have quite a good handle on stress. There's so many questions in my head. I had to do a lot of soul searching. Personally, I spend quite a bit of time on my own. I've realised that I'm quite an introverted person. I just like recharging my batteries on my own. Now, some people, they recharge their batteries with other people, seeing a friend, going for coffee and like talking about their problems. Some people that really works. But when I've got something like this, like it's almost like an existential crisis, I kind of spend that time on my own. I'll like go out for food on my own. I'll go, I'll just do whatever feels right for me. And that helps me, it gives me space to think then and kind of process things. And it's difficult because I'm still going to therapy, seeing my psychodynamic therapist, and she's not a CBT trained therapist, and I'm trying to explain these kind of panic attacks and this feeling of being out of control and how much it scares me. And that was difficult because there's only so much that she can do to help me. So at that point, I knew I'd done the right thing, calling Sarah. It's another therapy session to pay for, but, I see this as an investment in my, mental health and in my future. That flight is really kind of round the corner for me. And I was thinking, I just don't want to, I don't want to cancel my holiday. I still want to go through with this. It's worth, pursuing this CBT therapy and seeing Sarah. So what are we on now? It's Friday. So Monday night, I drove up to Wilmslow, which is just south of Manchester. So drove a couple of hours, stayed there overnight in the hotel. And it was finally then on Tuesday time for my therapy session. Now, it's quite weird because I've actually had Sarah on this podcast and, we've done quite a lot to support each other on Twitter and Instagram. And, we've just generally like got each other's backs. It's one of those kind of online relationships where, you really kind of make friends with someone and you're both like really big supporters of each other. I just really like Sarah as a person, to be honest. She's just such a friendly, warm and, thoughtful, caring, just like a really great person, like really positive as well. Just really gravitate towards her. She's just a really great friend. So it's finally time for a session and I was really, I was nervous, I was anxious. And I was also excited because I've spoken to this person so much, but never met them. And finally it was time. And it was in such a weird setting as well. Because CBT therapy is not like the therapy that I've had. CBT therapists are often coaches as well. Because CBT therapy is a lot more directional, as in the therapist will almost like dictate, what you need to do sometimes, or they might set you homework to go away with after the session. Or they might tell you to like read a book, like Sarah did. It's just a lot more, like say, direct and directional. Psychodynamic, for example, they sometimes rely on you to come up with the answers. You have to go away and you have to reflect on things. So it's, it was an interesting change of pace in that respect. So we get there, we sit down, and I kind of Sarah knows a bit about me from our conversations, and I've been on her podcast as well, because Sarah's got a podcast called Ask the Therapist. So you should check that out, by the way, because I'm on there. And she's also had some really great guests, to be honest. Some other therapists and some friends of hers. So yeah, I would check that out if you're into podcasts like this one. She does a really great job as well, really friendly with her guests. But yeah, we go in, we sit down, I explain a little bit about my past, and I'm also explaining, what my panic attack looked like, my first one, what it was like for me being on the plane, the kind of situation with work, because I knew that that had something to do with it. I feel like it's at least a contributing factor, if not one of the causes. So yeah, I just kind of went through, and Sarah was great. She had already prepped for the session. She asked me to read that book. I came in, I'd read the book, and at least most of it anyway. And yeah, she'd prepared these kind of diagrams for me, and she was taking notes and showing me the notes throughout the session. And she kind of explained some of the more sort of scientific reasons behind why panic attacks happen. And she actually explained that her sort of model of therapy that she kind of endeavors to use with clients is CBT, so cognitive behavior therapy, but also CFT, which is compassion focused therapy. And this is relatively new kind of therapy. And the reason that she combines CBT with CFT is that CBT doesn't work for 20 to 30% of people. And this guy at Derby University, I think his name's Paul Gilbert. I'm really sorry if I've got his name wrong, but once I've heard a name like once or twice, I remember it, but I've only heard this guy's name once, so I might have totally got that wrong. It's definitely Gilbert, his surname, but maybe the first name's wrong. Anyway, this guy came up with a completely different model of therapy, and the reason he did that is because, like I say, he was fascinated by why there was this 20 to 30% of people that didn't respond to CBT therapy. They just didn't take to it for some reason. It just didn't work for them. So he started looking into that. And when he looked into it, he understood that there was a lot of guilt, there was a lot of shame, there was some kind of underdeveloped emotional capacities as a result of upbringing. And when that was present, that was when CBT could not be kind of taken on board. So it's fascinating just alone with that. But what's really great is that there's a collection of CBT therapists like Sarah that are combining CFT, so that people come in the room, and CBT can almost be a little bit robotic and process driven. It's almost like formulaic and very prescriptive. If someone comes in with depression, we treat them this way. If someone comes in with anxiety, we go through these we go through these processes. So CFT is great because it kind of expands that practice that you can give to a client, and yeah, it gives you a bit more of a toolbox as a CBT therapist to be able to help your clients. So she went through that with me, and she went through the CFT model, which kind of explains how we've got a natural threat detection system in our brain called the amygdala. The amygdala is a bit like a muscle, So, for example, when they do brain scans on people that have been to Afghanistan, their threat detection system, the amygdala, is larger in their brains, because they've been part of a war zone. And naturally, so that fight or flight kind of system has been very active. Well, it's the same in anxious people. They've got a very large amygdala, and as a result, they engage with what's called safety behaviors. Safety behaviors are behaviors that are designed to, they can present themselves in a variety of ways. So, for example, one of my safety behaviors is to avoid. So I try and stop a panic attack from happening, from avoiding the thing that's actually causing it. So the amygdala, because it's threat detection, what it does is it goes, oh, okay, you did an action, so you avoided that thing because I flagged it up for you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to flag it up again next time, so you can spot it even quicker. So, for example, me going to the cinema, that was my amygdala, kind of being over sensitive to, no, sorry, not oversensitive, misinterpreting the kind of violence that I was seeing on the big screen and interpreting that as a threat. And, it's a massive misinterpretation. And I completely forgot what I was going to say. And, oh, what was I going to say? I was talking about the amygdala. Sorry, I always do this. I cut myself off. What was that? I was talking about fight or flight. Amygdala is larger than other people. It's going to come back to me. Threat detection system. I'm getting there. And you're probably like shouting at your car, or like you're on a treadmill, or you're like in the shops listening to this, and you're like, oh, I know the answer because you were just saying it. Anyway, it's that amygdala picking up on that threat. Okay, I'm getting there now. And saying, oh, I've spotted that, and I'm going to bring it to your attention even faster next time. So you kind of get stuck in this like perpetual loop then of, these threats becoming more and more kind of flagged up by the amygdala, and you kind of being in more of an anxious and kind of likely to have a panic attack stage than you were than last time. And then she said that there's this kind of other zone, which is, it's kind of called like a calming zone. So, for example, when animals are out in the wild and, they've got a lion that's trying to attack them, they can't fight or flight. So, sorry, they can't fight a lot of the time because, like, gazelles, for example, like, they've got horns, but, like, they're probably not going to be able to impale a lion before it like gets them. So they've got like flight as an option. They have to run away. So as soon as a gazelle in the wild, like, manages to get away, it kind of enters this calming zone, and the body releases oxytocin because you feel safe. And we've got that same capacity as humans. We just get to that calming zone a lot slower because we're self-aware. We're able to kind of look back and reflect on what's happened, and it stays in our minds longer. Well, what you often find with people that are kind of having anxiety or panic attacks is that calming zone is kind of a problem area in their life. There's it could be in their personal or professional lives. They don't feel particularly safe. So those levels of like oxytocin and feeling like they belong somewhere are kind of a lot lower, so they become more vulnerable. And it basically it can be improved by having, a strong friendship circle, having more security in your life. And I was kind of told to, I need to start practicing mindfulness every day, really. So I downloaded Headspace and I've been using kind of the meditations each night before I go to bed. They've actually got something really great on there called sleep casts, by the way. So if you struggle with sleeping, there's these things called sleep casts. They're 45 minutes long and you set it up, before you go to bed. For example, the one I listen to is about like a train journey. It's like really peaceful. You're rolling through the countryside on this train, and it's this guy kind of narrating you through it. And then a couple of minutes in, he gets you to do a breathing exercise. So you start off by breathing in through your nose for 4 seconds, holding your breath for another 4 seconds, and then releasing your breath over 6 seconds. And you do that five times, and that's the breathing exercise over. And he kind of carries on then with the narration. And I'm literally out like a light within like 5 minutes. So I would really recommend it. But yeah, before bed anyway, I've been, said make it part of your routine. I've been doing these meditations and trying to become more mindful because that's one of the ways of reducing the size of your amygdala. So, as you can tell through this session, I got like a hell of a lot out of it and, really been given some things to focus on. And, I've got to make some lifestyle choices, taking this mindfulness stuff on has kind of been interesting. And also trying to like reduce the stress in my life and kind of think about how I can make myself more secure and think about my friendship circle and my family and that sort of thing. Kind of making that calming zone as kind of frequent in my life as possible. Because that really helps reduce the kind of likelihood of panic attacks. And what's the weirdest thing for me, I'm going to try and finish soon because I know this has been a long episode for you guys, but I just wanted to explain this because I think this is really going to help someone. The hardest thing for me to accept though was the fact that I can't think my way out of a panic attack just like I can with anything else. Like the greatest thing about the therapy that I go along to, psychodynamic therapy, is it's a lot about you and it's a lot about thinking. A lot of it's under your control. Your counselor is kind of there to like bounce ideas off of, and they lead you sometimes, but a lot of the time you're on your own. And you're in the respect of like reflecting on things. And it was very difficult for me to hear that. When a panic attack happens, I should lean into it and encourage it and allow it to happen so it doesn't normalize and, become a regular everyday thing that just happens to me. I'm actually meant to be running at this thing head on and kind of taking it on. So it's kind of scary from that respect, and I'm still kind of. I mean, it's only 3 days ago I had this session. I'm still thinking about what she said, and I'm still taking it all on board. The session was incredibly useful. I mean, I've not felt as though I've been edging, like on the verge of having a panic attack. I felt as though, I mean, I haven't had one either, which has been great. My last one was in the cinema a couple of weeks ago, and I feel like I'm recovered from that now. Like say, you get this kind of like emotional hangover after the panic attacks, and I'm feeling better about getting on the plane. I still feel anxious, I still feel worried, but I'm kind of a bit more reassured now that I've got like a plan of action, and I've got a bit of validation from someone. I've been able to talk it through with someone who like understands and is not just gonna offer like platitudes. They've got like real things to say. So yeah, it's really helped, and I'm going to try and see Sarah again and go for some more therapy sessions with her. And I hope this has helped you understand a little bit more about CBT therapy. I hope this has helped you understand about panic attacks. I hope you've enjoyed this episode and you've got a lot from it. I know it's been like very information heavy and it's been a lot of me talking. I'm probably saying like a lot because I always say like. I just hope you got something from it. And it's been actually really cathartic for me, like being able to talk about it out loud like this. So I appreciate you listening if you've got to the end of this very long episode. I hope you like the jingle at the start of the episode, by the way. That's something new that I'm trying. I don't like the intro where it's just my voice. I want a little bit of sound, a little bit of jazz. So hit me up on Twitter if you like this episode, especially if you like the jingle. Tell me if you like the jingle. Please tell me. Hit me up on Instagram. My Instagram is dudel92. And my Twitter is at knowyourselfpod. That's at knowyourselfpod. So you can get me on there. I'm really active on both platforms. And thanks for being along for the ride. I appreciate you being here and listening. And I hope whatever you're doing today, it's great. I hope you have a great day. And let me know if you've liked this style of episode where it's kind of a bit more intimate. That's it. That's the show. It's done. So take care. I'll be back soon. I've got that episode with Aoife. She's an integrative therapist. It's actually this weekend I'm interviewing her. On my last podcast episode I mentioned her name, but I think I screwed up the dates, so we're actually doing it this weekend. I'm interviewing her on Sunday, so this episode will come out first. I'm probably going to publish this either tonight or tomorrow, and then next week Aoife's episode is going to come out. And I'm super excited to meet her properly and talk to her. It's going to be great. So stay tuned. And I hope you've enjoyed the episode. Take care. Love you lots from Dan.